Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm Quentin Wolfe, and this week we are going for a poodle around the back of one of London's biggest stations, one of its busiest, and one that has seen in recent years enormous transformation.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sound. You ain't never seen the light before, just a stone's throw from your front door.
Well, hello, hello from what, to my mind, is the worst piece of art, I think it's meant to be art, in London. We're standing out the back of King's Cross. I've come to see a young man out the back of King's Cross. Ben Pedrosa, a swing in a birdcage, where we're all invited to sit around on benches and essentially spectate a lone child on a swing. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite weird. Never really quite understood what the point of it is, but there you go. Welcome to London.
That almost should be the introduction to the entire series rather than just today's podcast. Ben Pedrosa, the author of Do Not Alight Here, and many articles and blog posts and taker of photographs.
That's about it, really. Yeah,
that's a pretty good guy. And we're here at King's Cross. For what reason?
Well, I thought it might be a nice excuse, opportunity, if you like, to talk about various disused, derelict buildings, mainly related to the railway, in and around King's Cross, St Pancras area. There's a whole host of things to see or things that used to be there in this area, and it's particularly relevant at the moment because the whole area behind King's Cross is part of a huge redevelopment. So there's kind of quite a few hidden bits of history that many people might not know there, and some that disappeared, and even some that the history has been reworked into the redevelopment, which I personally find quite interesting.
If you haven't been around the back of King's Cross recently, listener, and by recently, what do we mean, like two years probably?
Yeah, probably about 4 or 5 years now. Yeah, and since, you know, if you include in the redevelopment of St Pancras, 2007, around about then, a lot's been going on here, and it's certainly a lot different to what it was in the 70s and 80s, where around the back of King's Cross meant something quite different, I think, back then.
Well, yes, let's not beat around the bush. I wish I hadn't used that phrase. This was a hotbed of drugs and prostitution.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now a pop-up bicycle fair, Cycle Camden, has got its stall there. Cycle racks everywhere you please. And this has kind of a Hoxton air. There's a lot of people who look like they're working media companies knocking about.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few media buildings around here, and there's the university campus close by as well now, which is part of the huge redevelopment of part of the old train goods yard. So yeah, it does have a shortage feel now, I guess, which
this is one of the few places where gentrification, if that's what we can call it here, has been, I think, embraced wholeheartedly. In other places, people tut and grumble. Not so much here, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's some people that will miss how this was in the 70s and 80s, but I think most people will agree it's a lot better now, and it's brought a lot of new life to the area. I mean, as we're walking now, it's a Tuesday afternoon, it's jam-packed full of people, so...
With your specialism in the railways, what's been the redevelopment here? And I'm saying this with in mind the idea of what happened in this same area when the railways first came through, squishing a lot of stuff that was here in the first place, rookeries, Somerstown, all that jazz. What's been the effect in terms of the railways and the connections and all that stuff of the redevelopment?
I mean...
Well, there's the big obvious one, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the terminus of two huge train stations from the Midlands and the East West Coast. So that's why the train stations were built here in the first place. So it's always had that history. And as you say, the train stations, to build them, they cleared out a lot of slum areas. A lot of people had to move. A lot of people lost their homes. And then it became a railway lands, if you like. And then within 4 or 5 decades, it kind of become abandoned and a bit of a slum once again. And now it's kind of been regenerated to something new and shiny again. So, but that's London. That's the thing that intrigues me about London in general. It's, you know, I hate to sound cheesy and corny here, but it is constantly reinventing itself, regenerating itself. So I don't know, it's kind of in a constant state of flux and a constant state of movement, and I think that's the most interesting thing, really, yet still centred around these two very important, significant railway stations, and significant to the rest of the country, because this is the portal to so many people from outside of London. They arrive here, so...
We've got a few major hubs, mainline hubs. What do they call it on a train ticket? London terminals.
Yeah.
So we've got a few of those. How does King's Cross stack up against the others?
I do like the redevelopment. I think in terms of passenger flow, it's got a few problems. But personally, my favourite is next door, St Pancras International, which I probably say is the most beautiful train station in London.
Now, that's the one where your family could go for a day out and never have to bother themselves with the train and still feel like they've had a satisfactory experience.
Correct, yeah. I can just get lost looking at the beautiful glass ceiling for a long time. I just think it's beautiful. I think the redevelopment they did there was absolutely excellent. And as I say, the King's Cross one is good. It's not, personally, I don't think it's quite as nice as St Pancras, but it's good. And it's nice that they've redeveloped the hotel there as well. But yeah, St Pancras would definitely be my favourite.
The famous hotel, of course, one of the most beautiful high Gothic structures, isn't it? The curved frontage of that hotel. What is it now?
It's a very expensive high-end hotel above St Pancras. The one that they've redeveloped and reopened in King's Cross, I don't think it's quite as high-end from what I can gather, but it's still quite expensive. So, but yeah, very nice inside, I'm sure.
We're coming now to the end of King's Boulevard, and you can go up to a viewing platform there. It looks as though you can probably look across the... Should we have a quick look there?
Yeah.
I wonder if we can get across. It's like a siege tower, and it allows you, I think, to look across the building works that are going on. Scooting through now, and up an industrial staircase. And to a wooden platform here that gives us a pretty decent view over the platforms there. We can see the platforms going into the terminal. And the minuscule King's Cross Theatre to our left. The thing that's obscured, really, is all the new structures over our right shoulder. These are pretty much all new, I think.
I think it might be student accommodation. I'm not 100% sure. Or maybe even just regular apartments. I'm not quite sure.
Regular apartments? Affordable housing?
I doubt it, but regulars in non-students.
Have we finally found the unicorn? Is this the affordable housing?
Yeah, potentially. No, but this area, this view here is actually what I love about this particular area, because this whole thing was extremely derelict. This is old railway yard. So this was a goods yard, it was a depot, but it was abandoned and derelict. So you mentioned seeing the trains at the right at the end of the platform at King's Cross. That area down there was actually a station at one time called King's Cross York Road, which closed down. It was sort of an auxiliary station from the mainline station.
So this is like Waterloo East?
Kind of, yeah, sort of. And then it's now a university campus, but this whole area here was Great Northern Railway coal offices, and there was a huge amount of sidings where coal trains and freight trains used to sit. So if you can imagine this, even 40 years ago, this was a derelict, horrible place. And what's also interesting here as well is actually in my second book, which was covered disused power stations and gas works, this actually was also the home of Pancras Gas Works, which was a huge, huge gas production plant with a lot of, you know, the gas holder rings, the iconic structures, some of which are actually being incorporated in the development. There's a sort of spherical apartment building there, and you can kind of see some of the girders. They're actually bringing that back as part of the redevelopment. And I believe one of the more well-designed gas holder structures is also returning to this site as well, which is good. So they're actually maintaining some of its history as a gasworks. And actually, interestingly, when they were redeveloping this, someone from the development agency actually contacted me to give them some brief history of the area as a gasworks. I don't actually know whether they used it in some sort of leaflet or paperwork, but I just thought it was quite good that they actually, you know, they're actually not ignoring the fact that this has a huge industrial heritage, and they're maintaining some of that, so, which I think is quite nice. And I think in somewhere like London, that's done so well. You know, things are repurposed and some things are forgotten about, some things are completely lost, but some things are maintained, so you have a little small trace of what things used to be. And people might not know what it was, people might not care, but it's kind of there, and it's sort of, if you want to explore it and find out what it was, you can. If you don't, then that's fine. So
it usually skips a generation, doesn't it? Normally we're so excited about ripping down whatever the last generation did with an area that we forget to record it and forget what might have been good about it, and then the next generation harks back to it and wishes they could revive it in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, a good example of that is obviously King's Cross and St Pancras is very close to Euston Station. A good example of that is what they used to call the Euston Arch, which was a huge structure that sat right outside Euston Station, which is, you know, literally 10 minutes away walk from here. And that was pulled down to much protest, and as you say, it was kind of forgotten about, and now this generation is sort of saying, you know, that shouldn't have happened, let's rebuild it. So I think that's a prime example of what you're talking about. Kind of think people want to see things gone a bit, again, a bit like Battersea Power Station and Bankside Power Station. It's the same kind of thing.
Now there's a station that really could use some love.
Euston, yeah. I mean, it will be, in fact, it may have already began, redeveloped as part of the High Speed 2 line, which will terminate at Euston. So, yeah, it's in desperate need of a huge rehaul. I don't like that station much at all.
No, I get the impression that 20 different architects who all hated each other were putting that together.
Yeah, absolutely. It does feel that way.
Now, this is really interesting to me, because having been here umpteen times, I never really realised that the canal was quite so close to the station, nor how big and beautiful it is. Winding through, as we look to the station more or less ahead of us, the canal off to our left there, narrow boats nestling under the bridge, and then it curves off round behind us, and I see we've got some steps here. Do we know what that plaza is over there?
I think it's part of the university campus. It's actually quite nice down there. And but again, yeah, the canal is another thing that's been repurposed and reused again. I mean, if you can imagine all those years ago, just coal barges and dirt and grime and real industrial places, but again, they're being reused and they're having new life breathed into them as well.
Until you mentioned the coal offices, it never occurred to me that that whole business of providing coal for the railways must have been an enormous logistical operation.
Absolutely, yeah. The coal would primarily come from Newcastle in the north on barge, obviously, so it would take a long time, and then offloaded to power the trains.
So what, was there a big pile of coal somewhere around there?
I imagine there must have been, yeah. I mean, this particular building that we can see in front of us now, this was an actual coal office for the Great Northern, because a lot of the railway companies back then, as well as running passenger services, they also were involved in freight and coal in particular. A long way down from Newcastle, but the canal is full of barges. And interesting as well, the actual London canal network was actually built by essentially the same group of people that actually built the original Metropolitan Line underground lines as well. So there's a connection with the history of the London Underground there as well. So,
Do you know what? I've never thought to question it until now. What is a navvy?
It's a navigator, because they're the people who navigated the building of the canals. And they were mainly out-of-work tin miners from Cornwall and Ireland as well, and they were employed to do the backbreaking, horrible work of building the canals, and then they were sort of exploited to a large extent by the railways because they knew that these guys would work for cheap. They didn't mind doing backbreaking, horrible work, and they're the guys that by hand dug the original cut and cover lines of the London Underground, and a future generation of the navvies would also construct the deep level tube lines, you know, literally digging by hand and tool way, way, way below London. Very dangerous, dangerous work. I'm not sure they actually had a particular skill, but it was just manpower.
Well, presumably it's no small thing to be able to dig in a straight line underground, because you'd lose your bearings, wouldn't you? There must be a little bit of a technique to that.
Absolutely, especially as we're talking about, you know, decades and decades before measurement equipment. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a certain amount of skill there, but I imagine there was some sort of what you'd probably call a surveyor or something today, but I imagine they got paid a lot more than the navvies.
We're just coming to the bridge over the canal here. Which way are we going?
This way, if you want. Yeah.
That doesn't work on radio.
We'll head towards what is now a University of Arts London campus, which again was part of the railway lands before. And you can see here they've...
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Just seen a swan coming into land, which is very much like an Airbus coming into land.
Yeah, it was, actually. But this is a building that particular... They've left almost how it was. Obviously, they've tarred it up with new windows, etc. But it's, this building looks pretty much how it did, how it would have done all those years ago, and you can even see at the top, it's quite grimy up there.
Six stories of brown brickwork, and you can see the places where the winches and pulleys would have been to take goods up to those upper doors.
And there's a building there to the left of the university campus, which actually has a hole in the roof, and the windows are still bricked up, so I imagine that's still one of the old train yard buildings that they haven't finished developing yet. Well, actually, it's a prime example of how all this whole area looked until they started redeveloping.
There's literally a solidity about it, but there's something kind of reassuring as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's solid, it's lasted for a long time, and we'll be here for the foreseeable future.
Now, I'm not sure whether we're seeing tram lines or rail lines here, but as far up the courtyard as we can see, there are dual tracks, and they come down to what I guess must be one of those platforms, one of the circular platforms for turning a train or a tram around.
Yeah, I imagine this would have been part of very basic internal railway route within the site, because obviously this would have been sidings as well, but there may have been sort of a low-tech railway. Or perhaps this was actually for the main sidings, because, as you mentioned, there was what looks to be a... crossover point where... for turning the point. So, yeah, this must have actually been some sort of working railway to and from the sidings. This here, particular, in front of us now, we can see what is an old train shed. And again, even, 10 years ago, if people are familiar with the area, you used to go by York Road from King's Cross onwards, and you could see this whole area was these train sheds just rotten and decaying, overgrown, and now they've repurposed it. They've kept the train shed roof, and this is what I love about it. It's got that real, whether people notice it or not, it's got that real, they've maintained that connection to what this area used to be. So
this place is seriously cool.
It is actually. Yeah, it makes you wish you were a student again, actually.
Well, hang on, this tells me all I need to know about being a student at this place. They've got an on-site Waitrose.
Yeah, and on-site ping-pong tables. Things have changed since I went to university.
Now, tell me if the experience was the same for you, but when I was at university, you would make a Tesco value can of baked beans last as long as possible.
Yeah, or a pack of super noodles.
Oh, yes.
Which I haven't eaten for a long time, I'm glad to say.
And if you were really skint, you'd put half of the sachet in the super noodles and you'd keep the other half for a delicious soup at some later point.
Yeah, and same with pizzas as well. You'd eat the pizza cold 2 days later.
I'm beginning to lose sympathy for the students and their student loan problems.
Yeah, me too.
We're slowly, slowly coming towards the end of the rail tracks here. They've been cobbled. It's difficult to say what was the original and what's the more recent.
Now, the thing that's interesting about this part of the site is a lot of London listeners will probably be already know about the various disused tube stations, but there is a lovely example here. We can actually see it just beyond. It's the old station building of York Road, which was a station on what became the Piccadilly line.
Oh, yes.
And you can see it's a lovely, familiar red brick building, red tile building.
Now, can you remind me, we've got all the Art Deco ones around the city, but this one belongs to that other big generation of tube stations, doesn't it? It's much more ornate. It looks a little bit more fin de siècle.
Yeah, it's the red terracotta. I'm colourblind, so I think it's red terracotta tile design.
What are you seeing that at? You've no idea.
It's reddish. It looks really sort of burgundy terracotta type colour to me. That's what it is, apparently.
just for a control... You see this enormous picture of leaves that they've got on the hoarding outside this building. What colour are the leaves?
Green.
Okay.
It's usually just between pink, dark red and dark blue I have struggled with at times. I'm easy to play snooker against, put it that way.
Pink and dark red?
Yeah.
That's a very unusual sort of colour blindness, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Is it possible to be racist if you're you?
It's quite difficult.
Bloody burgundy people. So I've completely lost my bearings now. Which road are we emerging onto?
This is York Road, so York Way, sorry. So King's Cross is just back down there.
And this is heading, what, north?
Yeah, this is heading towards...
the Highbury direction.
Camden more.
Right. Yeah, I kind of approve. We've got, I think they're meant to be oak leaves, or maple leaves maybe, in profusion all over the hoarding outside this building works. And you know, some building sites try all sorts of visual tricks to conceal what they're up to. Like, some of them will put a hoarding that has a representation of a completed building on it so that it all looks nice and tidy.
Yeah.
I think I approve of more greenery. What a mess it is in there. That looks like another five-story tower. That's worth noting that a lot of the towers are restricting themselves, it seems. There's no real skyscrapers.
No, I mean, that's a common rule across London, where a lot of the time buildings can't be a certain height. I'm not sure what the significance of that here is. Maybe because it maybe blocks out St Pancras, King's Cross. I'm not sure. Maybe it's based on demand. But, yeah, I've noticed that too. Yeah.
So we can see one, two, three.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Four towers under construction from here. And now here we are, we're approaching it. And actually, it's dwarfed by the architecture around it.
Yeah.
It looks like, it really does look like a lost object.
Yeah, it is. And what's a real shame is that you can see the faint lettering of the York Road station, but that was originally proper lettering, but someone's at some point has removed it. So it would have been a lot more kind of well-preserved than that. It's a shame, really.
Well, you think they've half-inched it, do you, so that they can have the words York Road station in their kitchen?
More than likely, yeah. So this was York Road tube station on the Piccadilly line. It was never really well used, which is one of the reasons why it closed down. But it does explain today why there's a big gap if you catch the Piccadilly line between King's Cross, St Pancras and Caledonian Road. It's because that's where the station would have been midway through. And trains actually do go through the platforms today, and there is a few things you can see from if you really peer into the darkness. But it's a beautiful building. It's one of the kind of better preserved disused tube stations, but it's in sort of a forgotten about location. It was a printing works for a while, I believe, but that seems to have closed down now as well.
Well, with all this development going on behind us, and if any decent proportion of these are meant for people to live in, this suddenly becomes quite a useful station, doesn't
it? Yep, there's been talk a few times of it possibly being reopened, because, as you say, it's a great location. The actual high-speed one train line to Paris runs feet away, basically, and it would make perfect sense. But if these developments are housing, which it looks like some of it is, or students, or whatever it is, you think there'd be use for it. So I think that's probably the reason why it's actually intact, because Transport for London or whoever owns it has potentially got that in mind at any moment, I guess. But yeah, it would make sense to bring it back into use.
Now, I know you're quite keen on getting into abandoned stations whenever you can. Have you been in here?
I haven't been in here, no. In fact, despite writing a book on them, there's very few that I have actually been in, which is always a cause of frustration.
How does it work? How do you get into them? Well, how do you not get into the vineyard, guys?
I'm too much of a goody-goody two-shoes to do any urban exploring. The proper guys who actually somehow get into these places, we won't go into that too much. That's not for me. But now, to be honest, the London Transport Museum does actually these days run tours to a lot of these buildings. It was originally just Aldwych, which is probably the most famous disused station in central London. But in the last year or so, they've actually opened up a lot more of these things. So who knows, maybe at some point there may be a chance to go in there legitimately. But so I had a chance to go down, head down street, which was another one of the more famous disused tube stations near Hyde Park, but that fell through.
Oh, yeah, we don't know. I was involved.
You, wasn't it? Yeah, exactly.
No, we got stood up royally, but now I don't know whether we should. I don't want to give him the publicity, actually.
No, I don't either. But that station is actually one of the ones that London Transport Museum do tours to now, so I will be able to get down there at some point.
Where? Moving down there. I mean, I don't need to tell you with the audio background you've got, there are building works going on nearby. And cranes are plenty. I think if I had any sense, I'd be in the crane hire business. It seems to be a booming business.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed. I don't know if you saw them when they were putting the Olympics up, but we seem to have reached a new generation of cranes. Look like they belong in Star Trek, actually, on one of those orbiting space stations fixing up the USS Enterprise. So you've got a vehicle and it goes up in a straight line, and then it bends around in all sorts of different directions and seems to be capable of any manner of articulation that you care to employ it to do. And you get a whole load of these working on things, and it's like lots of giant mechanical seaweed washing around over the structure and just kind of organically putting it together. So I wanted to ask you, with the whole abandoned tube station, I know there's been one or two serious attempts to turn them into viable ventures of other sorts, apart from, you know, what they use for at the moment, film locations and that kind of stuff, but to turn them into hotspots. And there doesn't really seem to be a lot of that going on. I wonder what the reason is for that.
It's tricky because, first of all, any structure that someone wants to redevelop costs a lot of money, but when you're talking about something that's underground, and they usually have a huge lift shaft in them, which is literally a gaping hole. There's so much work to do. It's very expensive. But I think the reason why a lot of projects, proposals to turn tube stations into something different fall down is for kind of, firstly, for operational reasons, because all the disused tube stations are actually working emergency exits for tube stations, for the tube lines that run now. So they all have a use as an emergency exit. So Transport for London to lose that means they're actually using a legitimate means of people exiting if there's an emergency. So there's operational reasons there, but also I think Transport for London and whoever owns these buildings, they know what they've got, and they know that it's actually precious real estate. And I think if something's going to be used for them, they probably want to do it themselves, which kind of makes sense. And as well, what I mentioned earlier on about the tours, there's a lot of tours that you can go down to some of these buildings now, and they sell out really fast, so there's money to be made there as well. So I think it's a mixture of, it's just difficult to do, it's they're actually used, and they know what they've got. So
you raised the delicious prospect of TfL running nightclubs at some point.
Yeah, that'd be quite something.
The song pumping away and then stopping, and an announcement coming on that they've got to wait a few moments to regulate the service.
Yes, have to wait 20 minutes for the next song to come on. But there have been some interesting proposals. It's just, you know, whether they actually happen. I mean, the deep level shelters, which were a network of platforms that were built below existing platforms originally to form a sort of an express service on what is the Northern Line now, and they were actually, most of them were used for shelters.
No, wait a minute, an express service on the Northern Line? What do you mean, like an elite Northern Line?
Yes, so basically the deep level shelters were, as they're called, there's 8 of them. They're known mainly now for being used as shelters for air raids in World War II. But their actual original concept was there was to be a kind of express route which would bypass some of the stations and only stop at the more important ones. So most of the deep level shelters are actually built approximately under existing tube platforms like Camden, etc. And that was their original purpose. But then that got halted by the outbreak of war and another use for shelters, and that's the history that most people associate them with now. A few of them have been used for years now as data storage because it's the right conditions and obviously it's safe and secure. So that is an example of something that, you know, can be reused for something that's got a lot of value. But it remains to be seen whether some of the more kind of fun uses that people are proposing for tube stations would ever actually happen.
Presumably, it could be that they could get those express services happening one day. What do you think of that as an idea?
I guess it'll probably ease a lot of congestion on the tracks and speed up some people's journeys. But you have to remember, though, that the actual connecting tunnels where the running tracks would have been were never actually constructed.
So, oh, right.
So there'll be a heck of a lot of work to do there.
Hmm. How much stuff gets built underneath tube lines, though?
Well, you have to remember that, especially in central London, a lot of tube lines pass under. Like, if you take something such as Oxford Circus, it's a whole complicated network of things that you don't see, of lines passing each other. Sometimes in some stations you can hear the lines above your head or below your head. So there's a lot of running lines above and below other running lines, but probably not a whole lot built actually below stations that isn't related to the running of lines.
Matt Brown did a fantastic post, and I wish I'd paid more attention. No retention whatsoever. But he did a fantastic article, do look it up, about how deep London goes.
Mm, I remember seeing it myself, yeah.
Yeah, I wish I could remember what is under the tube. Maybe nothing. We've sort of halted a little bit because there's a film crew down there and we're going to wander right across there. But I couldn't help noticing across the way here, since we're talking about some of the derelict or semi-derelict or repurposed industrial stuff, something quite interesting going on over yonder. So we're looking beyond the Hyundai fan dome. I've no idea what that is. Well, this is like an inflatable structure with angels on it, and angels carrying footballs. I presume this is for watching the TV. And over yonder, though, we can see what looks like some railway arches and what's left of the roofing. It looks as though it's been cut in half and then the end has been secured in some way. Any ideas on that?
I think that's still part of the railway lines, but just beyond that we can see, which is actually, I believe, yeah, that would be on the other side of the canal, is two of the new developments that are being built inside gas holder frames. And you can actually see from where we are there's a sort of the first tier of steel structure pieces of two of the original gas holder frames from the Pancras Gasworks, which was a really big gasworks that was here a long time ago. Because it's funny, because people, you know, associate this with the railway lands and the dereliction that was behind here, but people don't really realise that it was all, the gasworks was huge, you know, most of them were, and this was one of the biggest, owned by the big company that owned most of the gasworks in London. And, you know, this would have employed hundreds of people doing a very dirty job.
This is sounding like a prime target for the Luftwaffe.
Yes, it's not a bad shout, actually. In fact, it's funny you should say that, because some of the bigger power stations, they stopped burning coal during that period because, as you say, the smoke that would emanate from the chimneys was actually a clear target.
Well, let's start dodging back towards the station now. I don't want to go through the Hyundai fan dome. Not based on what's been going on overseas. I think football fans is the last thing we need.
Apparently there's a football tournament going on here, so...
Should we have an outbreak of violence just to commemorate it?
Yeah, why not?
I'll prod you with my microphone.
It's absolutely shameful, it really is. I mean, it's a football game at the end of the day, and it's just... I know it's the minority, but it's enough people to make it embarrassing, so...
I'm in mind that this conversation might be being broadcast either just before or just after the referendum vote. But as we're in the lead-up to the referendum, I'm conscious that as a nation we're making lots of disagreeable noises as far as our European neighbours are concerned. And we're going around and beating up members of the general public and disgracing ourselves on the streets of France. There must be a bit of the European mind that's thinking, you'd get lost.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's not very well timed, is it, at the moment? Certainly not the first time it's happened either.
No, I really thought we were done with all that, though. I remember I was in Europe quite a lot around the turn of the millennium, and wherever I went, people would free associate England with hooligans straight away. That's the first thing they seem to think of.
Yeah.
I hate the idea that we're back there.
It's genuinely embarrassing, it really is. Oh, actually, I've just noticed we missed that. That's another bit of one of the gas holders as well. Can you see it? I think that's one of the ones that's being brought back, or maybe just a section of it.
Well, we found a little oasis of quiet around here. Landscaped greenery, meadow flowers, artfully planted, curved benches, and Waitrose overlooking it. Waitrose really seems to dominate this area.
It does, yeah. it really does. It seems to dominate every area now.
We're next to the House of Illustration. I think there's a great cachet in having a Waitrose nearby, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think your house price probably increases if it goes up. We should say, just in closing, I don't know if you want to give this away, but you've not so long ago moved from one part of London to another, haven't you?
That's correct, yeah. I was living in North London and now I've moved south of the river, so I'm now a South Londoner.
Defected.
Yeah, which is took a while to get used to, mainly getting used to using mainline trains rather than the tube. In fact, I actually don't really use the tube at all anymore, which is quite weird because everybody who I know seems to like to call me a tube nerd, and I don't actually use it at all anymore. So
it's fine.
I mean, I use the railway company that's always voted either bottom or second bottom in terms of customer satisfaction, but fingers crossed it's actually not too bad on the line that I use. And my journey in central London every day is about 18 minutes, so it's pretty comparable to a lot of people's tube journeys anyway. So it's just different, you know. It's different when you go on the tube and you're used to one being there every few minutes. If you miss one, there's one a few minutes later. When you start using mainline trains, you have to catch a certain train, and you get in such a routine of seeing the same people on the same train every day. But I'd love to live in London, North London still, but we wanted to buy and there was no way we could justify North London prices. So yeah, it's different, but I'm used to it now.
One of the experiences that tells me A, I'm a Londoner, and B, I'm in London, is that one where you go onto a tube platform, and it might be on a Sunday or later on in the evening, and you look up at the describer board and it says 6 minutes until the next train. And there's a little thing in your heart that goes, oh, 6 minutes, you're kidding. And some people get really agitated and have to perform their irritation, yeah, and tap their foot and sigh in the general direction of whoever's there.
I'm one of them people, yeah.
Oh, no, are you? I made a promise to myself that I would not associate with people of that sort.
It's the longest 6 minutes ever. It's really frustrating because at least now the trains I have to catch, they're scheduled for a certain time. So if you have to wait 6 minutes, it's because it's 6 minutes late rather than 6 minutes when it says it's going to be. So
what happens if you go on the platform then and it does the awful 10 minutes or 14 minutes? Do you get a small atomic explosion between your ears?
Absolutely, and everybody around is doing the same explosion as well. You get a lot of angry people on mainline train platforms, more so in the tube, I'd say. So
right, everyone just becomes like 5-year-olds, don't they? They sit down on the bench, well, I suppose I'll just stay here forever then.
I don't care what people say, it definitely always happens on a Monday morning when it's raining more than any other day. So there you go.
We're going to finish up, but we just were looking over this manicured Teletubbies-like landscape here, and, well, it's rather curious, actually. There's an ominous-looking black building there. It looks like that was made in 2007 to be a computer company's headquarters. And in front of it, completely incongruously, are
more remains of an old gas holder. It looks like that's maybe all they're doing there.
It's a bit pathetic, to be honest. They haven't kept a ring, they've just kept three pillars and two connective girders.
Yeah, and that looks like that's going to be all of it. But
this reminds me very much, you know, when you go to a place and there's the National Trust is advertising that place on the strength of its abbey, and you go there and there's one small wall with a rubbish window in it, and that is the abbey.
Yes.
I think that's what the gas holder is here.
Yes, similar sort of effect. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. Doesn't quite work for me. But what they've done elsewhere on the site is quite impressive. Although I'm not really sure I'd want to live in a expensive apartment inside.
Well, I'm curious now because actually there is a little structure there, and that almost looks like that could be one person's house. Yeah. And it's essentially on a traffic island, stuck behind these three columns. That's very peculiar.
I believe that was actually a petrol station before that. Yeah, I think it was. I believe that was a petrol station that which briefly became a diner of some sort the last time I came down here, and then now it looks to be that. So
I think we may have found one of the most confused buildings in London.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's where we must end today, for no good reason other than time tells us it must be so. If you would like to pick up a copy of one of Ben Pedrochet's books, a reminder of their name and their location.
Do Not Light Here is the one about disused tube stations, and London's lost power stations and gasworks is quite self-explanatory. And then my...
What's it about?
funny enough, lost power stations and gasworks. Oh. And my third book was called Working the Underground, London Underground, which is about how the underground is run and maintained. For the 150th anniversary in 2013, so it's a history of sort of workers and how it was built and how it's maintained from the start right up to the 150th anniversary. BenPedroche.com is where I kind of don't update as much as I should do, but on Twitter as well, just search for Ben Pedroche and you can find me there talking rubbish most of the time.
Well, thanks very much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Ben Pedroche. Thanks to Mark Barr and Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe. Tide to
sights, sounds. You ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front.